Welcome to Always Andersonville, the podcast. I'm Charlie. This week, I am joined by Andy Johnston, owner of Andy's Art, Antiques, and Oddities. Andy's Art, Antiques, and Oddities was born from the cherished memories of Andy's late mother, Billy, a kindred spirit in the love of art, decor, and unique finds. Inspired by their global adventures and Billy's knack for discovering the extraordinary, Andy decided to pursue entrepreneurship guided by childhood ambitions. Named after his mother's endearing nickname for him, the boutique specializes in hand-picked, one-of-a-kind treasures for homes, aiming to evoke happiness, comfort, and curiosity. Andy's dedication extends to personalized consultations, ensuring clients find their perfect piece. With Billy's spirit infusing every aspect, Andy's Antiques embodies a lifelong passion and a tribute to a beloved mother. Hi, Andy.
Hi, Charlie.
Thanks for joining me today.
Thanks for having me.
We also have another little special guest with us. We've got Andy, but we've got the true star here, Sophie.
She really is.
She'd say hi, but she can't speak English.
I'm being her spokesperson today.
For those listeners who can't see Sophie, Sophie is the canine mascot of Andy's Art, Antique, and Odyssey.
Yeah.
Tell us a little bit about Sophie. How old is she? What kind of dog is she?
She is a Rhodesian Ridgeback mix.
Mm-hmm.
And she's 6 years old. As of last month.
She's staring at me intently.
She loves you.
I love her. We've met several times.
She's probably the most popular thing at my shop.
You just need the shop to just be like all treasured pieces of Sophie, like, you know, statues and costumes, and it's all just Sophie. Andy's Sophie's, Sophie's, and Sophie's.
Yeah.
Well, Sophie,
for Sophie's Art, Antiques, and Oddities.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Well, Sophie, we will talk to you later in the episode. You go ahead and take a nap. But Andy, so yeah, again, thanks for joining me today.
Thanks for having me again.
We heard a bit about your intro and the intro about your journey into founding Andy's Antiques, but I always ask our guests to give us a little bit more background on themselves before we jump in. So please tell me a little bit about you.
I was born and raised in Grand Rapids, Michigan. I escaped from there as quickly as I possibly could. I didn't like living where there was, say, no offense to religious people, but a church on every corner. I wanted a Starbucks on every corner. So I chose that.
We prefer a small business on every corner, but
I like that. That's true. Times have changed. I'd rather go to the small people too.
Andersonville is always Andersonville.
Yeah.
All right. So when did you get to Chicago?
Wow. I was 23. Years old.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, it was just a rough start. I started at a small business in Lakeview, and that was my way to get to the big city. I came with some friends one weekend to go to Crowbar. You're way too young to know what that bar is, but it was a great dance club, and I knew I had to be here. I walked around Lakeview at the time. I mean, Andersonville wasn't anywhere you went if you were coming to visit as a LGBTQ+ at that time.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where I went, and I was like, yep. I got to live in Chicago.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah. I feel like I've talked to a lot of people that have that reaction. I had that reaction. I got here and I was like, whoa.
Yeah.
This is my city.
Yeah.
I've never been here before, but there's something about this place.
Well, I mean, I think it was literally, I saw two guys walking down the street holding hands and like nobody was fazed.
Mm-hmm.
And that just was like, I mean, I would go on dates in Grand Rapids and there was like that middle seat between us at the movies. Like, we're not gay.
Yeah. Like 6 inches for Jesus or whatever.
Way. Yeah.
Yeah. I think for me, I first lived in Andersonville when I moved here, and my mom and I were moving me in, and I'm from the East. And in the East, when you're walking down the street, you don't make eye contact with people. You kind of just mind your own business or you look down at the ground. And if you make eye contact, someone's like, what are you looking at? Here, we're walking down the street and these two people come up to us and they're like, hey, we saw you just moved in. Welcome to Chicago. Have you been in the Midwest before? This is a great grocery store. My mom and I look at each other like, what just happened?
Yeah.
So it was a great intro to the Midwest.
Yeah, I get new people in the shop. I'm always telling them where they should go in the neighborhood, and they think it's great. They're like, you're like our local tour guide. So I point out all the restaurants up by me.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
the bookstores. Yeah.
So, well, all right. Well, thank you. It's great to hear a little bit more about our business owners before we jump into my biggest questions, which for this one, all right. I've interviewed a number of people that run like art galleries or artists. I've interviewed a number of artists. I've interviewed some antique shop owners or some vintage shop owners, but I don't know if as of yet I have an oddities interview in the bag. So my first question for you is, by your definition, what is an oddity?
Well, it was a handy catch-all category at the time when I was trying to come up with a name. I wanted to show in my name that I was not just like Andy's Antiques or Andy's Art. So I was, and it kind of just rolled. It rolled really well to just say Andy's Art, Antiques, and Oddities.
Yeah.
So I think it's kind of subjective. I think everybody has their own definition of what an oddity is. I definitely feel that an oddity is rare or unique for the most part. Unusual.
Do you have anything either that you have now or you've had in the past that jumps out as some oddities that just really struck you?
You know, there's a lot of collectors of oddities out there, and the things that I've tried to secure for the shop were really hard to get.
Interesting.
One of my favorite things that I tried to get was like a apothecary jar full of glass eyes. And then one that I thought was an oddity that was beautiful was like from a parade. It was just a horse's, I don't know what you call those big heads that they would wear in parades, but yeah. Headpiece, headdress. And it was just gorgeous. It was just a beautiful piece. And that I thought was an oddity, but somebody else captured that as well. So it's a struggle to get the cool stuff because there's collectors out there with a bigger budget than I have.
Yeah, but you are always on the lookout for oddities.
Always.
I'm sure. I mean, that's the other thing is based on the definition, I've been in your store and there's definitely some things that when I walk in there, if I were to classify antique art or oddity, I would put it in oddity. And to you, it might not be an oddity, but to someone else, it's an oddity treasure.
I think the one that stands out is I went to an estate sale and got a big banker's box full of orthodontist dental forms. So someone had scratched all the names off the bottoms.
Yeah, you got to be HIPAA compliant.
But I had shelves of teeth for a while when I first opened.
Like the x-rays of
really,
teeth?
No, like actual the form, the mold.
Oh.
Yeah.
That's definitely an oddity.
Yeah. That was pretty popular.
And also, depending on who's coming, what age of the person coming into your store, a Gen Zer could walk in, see a rotary phone and be like, that's odd.
Oh, I got that.
That's so odd. Yeah, really? Oh, yeah. That's so depressing.
Or how to wick the jukebox in my shop. I'm like,
that seems like it should be obvious.
Not seen a jukebox.
Yeah. I mean, that seems like it should be kind of obvious. I don't know. Maybe that's just me. Well, great. That was definitely my first question, just because I'm one of my favorite things to do when I have people come in and visit Chicago is take them to places like that. So, or take them to places where they can find some antiques are more odd than others, or, you know, you found places. I mean, I've been in your store when I was there a couple weeks ago, even just the TV you had, you were playing I Love Lucy on it. And even just seeing that TV, I didn't have one of those personally. Actually, my grandmother still had one in her house for a while. But even just seeing that TV and seeing I Love Lucy on it was like this weird out of body existential, like transported me back to a time before global warming was, you know, unstoppable at that point. So,
yeah, I really wanted, that was one of the things when I envisioned my shop, I wanted things to feel authentic, to be in vintage or antique. So I went with chandeliers. Most of my lighting are chandeliers hung from the ceiling. I wanted a jukebox, and which I had, and now I have another one. And I wanted to have a TV in the front window to just, you see it in old movies and stuff, like
yeah,
TVs for sale in the windows showing something.
Or like you see, you know, all the people on the main street lined up watching the TVs in the windows,
yeah.
The moon landing, or even,
right,
you know.
Because they couldn't get one,
yeah,
you know, to afford in their own homes.
Brand new 13-inch color TV.
Yeah, and it was a high-end TV too, when it's a 50s RCA Victor Deluxe.
The deluxe
looks
is the
like,
important part
looks
of
like
it.
Looks like Sophie wants to jump in here.
Sophie came and is hanging out with me. You got anything to say, Soph? No? Just ear scritches? Okay. We'll keep going with that. Well, awesome. Then, you know, I want to take it back a little bit. Let's get nostalgic here. We're dealing with antiques, so we're gonna go backward in time because you had commented to me about your childhood entrepreneurial spirit.
Oh, no.
So, one, I need to hear all about where that childhood entrepreneurial spirit came from. And specifically, you ventured into your own, creating your own business here, but you had a little business as a kid, didn't you?
I did.
Can you tell us a little bit about your fortune cookie stand?
Well, I will start first, just like you were talking about my spirit of being a small business owner. Even when I was young, my dad owned his own company. So I just kind of got used to seeing someone who ran their own business. And I would go to the supply room and he's like, what do you want from the supply room?
What kind of business did he run?
He ran a company that did anodizing and plating systems.
Over my head. But
yeah, definitely. Way too much to go into and it's super boring. So I obviously didn't follow in my dad's footsteps. But I think one thing I started doing that I thought was kind of silly as I was always rearranging and redecorating my bedroom. Shocking. And sometimes I would put my desk sort of like out in the room, not really the middle of the room, but like on an angle, and I'd have my chair behind, and I'd have like the guest or employee chair, and I would like play office with my friends, you know, we'd have papers. And so I guess it kind of started kind of young, but my grandmother was a secretary, and she gave me her old typewriter, an old Royal, which I loved using. So that was already around. And then I had a subscription to National Geographic World. Have you ever heard of it?
Oh, yeah, yeah, of course. Really? I mean, just going through my dad's, their house, you know, they have, when we were cleaning it out after my grandmother died, they had a closet full of back-to-back issues of National. And it was like the color was always the same on all of them. Yeah. So it was like this stream of yellow in the closet. Yeah.
Well, this is something they did for kids so that kids would learn. And it was a magazine that came out monthly, I think, or maybe bi-monthly, but there was a fortune cookie recipe in there. And I asked my mom, I was like, I want to make these. It's been so long, I don't remember how I decided to do a fortune cookie stand. I just, you know, small business.
Hey, the lemonade stand industry was oversaturated.
Yeah, it was. I was like, I have to do something different to stand out. So I typed my own fortunes on little pieces of paper, and I used that recipe in the magazine. And I made my own fortune cookies, and I went out to the front of the property that we lived on, and I had a little table set up. And I do remember I burned my fingers a lot because you had to fold the cookie over like an egg carton, like an empty egg carton, mm-hmm. in order to get that shape. And I just remember burning my fingers a lot. I also remember eating most of them because I don't think they sold.
Do you remember any of the messages that you wrote? Oh, any gosh. Of the fortunes you wrote? Did you put the lucky numbers at the bottom too?
Well, I didn't have like a different font size, and I think I would have been very OCD to want a different font size. So,
do you remember any of the messages?
Gosh, no.
No. Okay.
They were probably pretty lame.
They didn't have these days. All of my fortune cookies have cryptocurrency ads on the backs of them. They feel a little less genuine because of the cryptocurrency ads. But
I think I just used notebook paper, ruled notebook paper, so there was nothing on the back.
Real authentic fortune
Very
cookies.
Very authentic.
I mean, that's really interesting. That's exactly the sort of fun thing I love to hear as a history of our business, of small business owners. I mean, let's talk a little bit about the store, because, you know, we've talked a little bit about, you know, the idea of oddities and the things you look for as oddities, but you have this very eclectic collection in the store, and it's a joy to just walk through and look at everything, and even sometimes just go in there and to touch something that is, is however many years old. But I'm curious how you go about curating the store and what your process is for selecting pieces, and if there's anything in particular you're always looking out for.
Well, I just sort of pick things out, procure things for the shop that catch my eye. It's really hard to, I don't really have like a system. Mm-hmm. I just see something, I like it. If it's obtainable, I get it for the shop.
Do you have an era that you are most fond of?
I love like 70s and the disco era.
Okay.
Yeah. In fact, the jukebox has mostly disco in it right now. And there will be a disco ball coming.
So that's going to be, you replace all the chandeliers and it's just a disco ball.
Yeah, well, I think they'll be pretty dark, but yeah.
So would you say you have a lot of good 70s in the store?
The shop has such an eclectic selection.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't think I have anything that's specifically a particular era right now.
Do you have a favorite thing right now?
In the shop?
Yeah.
Wow. The shop is procured by me, so I like the stuff I'm putting in my shop.
Yeah, exactly.
I have some former favorites. I had an 8.5 foot tall set of gold wooden carved wings.
Wow.
They were gorgeous.
It makes me think of sort of something you might see on the bow of a ship. If bow's the right one, I'm not really sure. I apologize. But like, where do they come from? Do you know where they...
I don't. I got them in an auction with some items that came from Europe. So I assume they came, you know, off of a theatrical building, maybe. They didn't look like angel wings.
No.
So probably a theater.
Do you have pieces in the store? I'm sure when you can, you know, obviously finding things like antiques and art, they come from all over. You never know exactly where they originated from. But do you have pieces in the store that you know the entire history of? And
I only have, I think, one at the moment. It's like this jug, very simple, that I purchased from an individual who was downsizing. And it's just a beige handled jug that his son brought over from his trip to London because his dad was making like his own moonshine. And the story this individual told me was that the funny thing was, is it was not even the correct type of bottle to use, but he would, you know, he's proud of his son for thinking about him and bringing something back that meant something to him.
Yeah.
So I had that story. I had a table. Probably one of my favorites was a table that I called Ed and Celeste's table. And the story on that table was the individual was in the military and he married his girlfriend and they bought a small house and they had no furniture. So the guys in his, I don't know what you call a military unit, I guess a military unit, used old wood to build a table for him and his wife. And they ate dinner there. They played cards with their friends. It's just, it was such a sweet table. Uh-oh.
You okay, Soph?
She wanted to get a word in edgewise.
Oh, well.
She thought the table was sweet, too.
She liked the table.
She liked the table.
She's sad that it's gone. Yeah. But that's great, though. I mean, that's I think that's one of the things about antiques and art and oddities is when you have that history behind them, it really creates that personal connection to them. I mean, you can imagine, have that image of your head of them sitting there eating dinner at this table every single night. I know you said you also offer consultations for clients who are looking for guidance in decorating, which is something you might not find in a lot of antiques and art stores, is of the sort of the more personal nature of consulting with someone. And I'm curious how that works with you and if you can give me an example of the sort of work you've done.
I haven't really communicated that a lot in any of my information as of yet. Mm-hmm. It's something that I want to pursue a little bit more. I have a lot of people who really love the way that I merchandise the store, or people who have been to my house who like the way I decorate. So I have like a bit of my own aesthetic, which I can attribute to my mother, Billy. Mm-hmm. So I get a lot of customers who say, oh, I love this painting, but I don't really know where I would put it or how it works with the decor I have. And so I tell them that I'm happy to, I've told them, you know, I haven't done it officially yet, but I say, you know, I'm happy to look, you know, at pictures of your home or come visit you and we can discuss where it might work. So it's kind of new. It's kind of in the works.
Yeah. But for someone, clearly you have an eye for merchandising and you have an eye for displays and everything.
Right.
So it's exactly, you know, the sort of person I would trust to come in and tell me this would look good over here.
Right.
I'm the sort of person where I say, you know what, I just got this poster and it's going to look great on that wall. And then I put it up and be like, this looks awful. This was the wrong decision. I am not spatially aware in that way.
Right.
So that's exactly the sort of thing I think I would pursue. And I, as a part of, you know, being a part of the Andersonville network too, you know, we love that personal connection where you can sit down with someone, even if they find a piece and, you know, you build that relationship and helping them decorate their home, making it feel more homey.
Right. So, I mean, I've had people come over and they're just like, how long? I could have lived in the house for 2 months and they feel like it feels like cozy and warm and inviting.
See, and that's difficult.
So I just am able to create this atmosphere. And I hear it about the shop even.
Yeah.
That it's just like a very comfortable atmosphere.
And it's difficult to accomplish that. I think especially in a place like Chicago where people, depending on, you know, they might move a little more often than we would like to. And going into a new apartment every few years and trying to create a new home out of it takes time.
Right.
So, and you mentioned, you know, the inspiration of your mom, of Billy. That's very, I feel like Andersonville and very small business is to hear that, you know, your mom has this continued influence on your business. And, you know, I assume that goes into a part of the items that you pick. You know, you said you find things that you like and you put them in the store, but I'm sure part of what knowing what you like comes from your mother too.
Right.
So, you know, do you have moments when you're item hunting or you're looking at something and you just think to yourself, that's a Billy piece or that's something Billy would love?
I can't think of examples offhand, but I'm sure that I have. And I just kind of feel my whole aesthetic again stems from my mom and the years of us going, like spending hours and hours at antique shops and even museums, like we'd go to small little tiny galleries in Mexico and look at the art there. It just, it was our past. Like, this is what we did. This was our relationship.
Did she have a favorite sort of item to look at or look into? Is there anything that always stuck out to her?
I don't know. I may have gained, you know, that understanding from her as well.
Essentially anything in your store.
Right. Just walk around. Well, my niece, here's an example. My niece, my youngest niece, Chase, came to visit couple years ago, maybe at this point, and she walked into the store, and their nickname for my mother was Mimi. And she's like, oh my God, Mimi would love this. Mimi, this is Mimi. This is, you know, the whole time she just kept repeating Mimi through the whole store. So it was obvious that I, you know.
You accomplished your goal.
My goal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the store, 100%. Whole store is Billy. Is
it's
Mimi.
Billy.
Yeah. Yeah. That's wonderful. I mean.
Originally, I considered using Billy in my shop name.
Yeah.
And I just kind of realized that, especially my mom spelled it B-I-L-L-I-E, I just wondered if people would get confused and think I was Billy.
Yeah.
So.
I mean, then you have a little story to start with, too. But also, you know, Andy's art, antiques art, not oddities, flows off the tongue very well, too.
Right.
How long has your physical location been open, been in operation?
I think I'm around 4 years now.
Okay. Opening a business, operating a business, we hear from a lot of people about the challenges of doing so. You know, what have been some of your biggest hurdles you faced since starting Andy's Art, Antiques, and Oddities? What did it take to 4 years would have been COVID? So
I opened during COVID.
Oh my gosh. Okay. Yeah. What was the breakdown? What's the story?
So that right there is an obstacle.
Yeah. Yeah.
I just had to plug along. I was already on the roll of looking at spaces and buying things for the shop, and then COVID happened. Mm-hmm. And the momentum, I didn't want to stop the momentum. So I was like, well, and we had no idea how long it was going to be. So I just kept going. It was slow in the beginning, very, very slow. So that was, I don't know if I really met that challenge. It just, you know, just it was there.
Took it a day at a time.
Yeah, one day at a time.
What was the moment when you decided you wanted to open a physical shop? You know, you go from opening a fortune cookie stand to opening opening a physical.
There were a lot of years in between there.
2 years in between.
There were a lot of years in between there.
But there's always, I feel like when I talk to people, there's always the moment when they can remember the moment when they realize they wanted to open their business or start a business or expand into a physical location.
Really, I just had left my corporate job after my mom passed, and I briefly did Lyft, which I did not like. Oh, you can make your own schedule. No, you have to work around where everybody needs you to be, not your own schedule.
And when it's busiest.
Right, exactly. So really early in the morning, and then when people go to the bars. So it just was not working out for me. And I was really still struggling a lot with my mom passing. And I think I just wanted to do something that I would enjoy, that I would enjoy as being an artist myself, and also just to honor the relationship and to honor my mom.
Do you think opening the store and working on that is part of what sort of helped you with the passing of your mother?
Yeah.
Yeah.
For sure.
Well, I mean, it sounds like she's there in the store with you. You mean even just your...
She could be.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know if this would be something you'd keep in the podcast, but I always wanted to believe in ghosts. And now that I've had a vintage shop, I 100% believe they're real.
Okay. Well, wait, can you tell me a little bit about that?
If you want.
Yeah.
I have quite a few stories.
Yeah. No, please.
Well, things always happened when I was opening or closing the shop. So that alone was sort of suspect. One of the first things that happened was I had two metronomes in the shop. And I was closing one night, and you're familiar with metronome,
yeah,
right?
Yeah. I'm just terrified already.
You are. So if you're familiar, like there's a little clip that keeps the ticking part secure, so mm-hmm. it's not always going. Well, one night I'm just getting ready to close up, and the metronome just starts going on its own. And I was like, oh, must have been a semi-rumbled down divan, or, you know, I was trying to think of excuses to not believe that something was going on that was otherworldly. I tell you, though, when somebody heard that that was haunted, it was gone. Like, it sold so fast.
So everything in your store is haunted then, right?
Every single item is haunted, I make sure. I think what did it for me was it was a rainy afternoon, and I was going into the shop and opening, like I do, turning on lights and getting signs in the window and that sort of thing. And there were muddy footprints in the shop. I'm not even kidding. And there were, no one had a key. There were no windows or doors that you could get into unless you had a key. And they started in the middle of the room and they faded as they went.
Oh my God.
I know, it sounds so hokey. And to tell that happened, I would, yeah. It was just, there was no way to explain that part away.
Do you feel like the antiques maybe are a part of having so many things that are from past times and have so much history behind them or maybe a part of that connection?
Maybe.
Yeah.
I feel like maybe spirits can connect, you know, to they felt strongly about a piece in their life. Like maybe that metronome, they were a musician.
Yeah.
And they used that metronome every day.
So make sure you come check out Andy's Haunted Antiques, Art, and Oddities. It's not all haunted.
I should change the name now and add haunted to it.
Well, no, but I mean, that's one of the things that I always think of when I go into antique stores is thinking about the history behind it. You know, I'm a huge horror movie person. So of course, every horror movie I've ever seen that has an old music box from the 1840s or something. Right. And I know there's a ghost hiding inside that music box, but it's intriguing. You know, the story behind it is intriguing.
I try to stay away from the really scary dolls.
Yeah.
I don't think I can deal with that.
Yeah. No, those that'd be great. I'm fine with that. I have a hard enough time with mannequins. You do have some very cute mannequins in the store.
I do.
They are dressed very well. You introduced me to some of them last time I was there.
Yeah, they all have names.
Yeah, they all have names.
I know. And it's probably a bit weird, but I don't care.
No, not at all.
Oddities.
I mean, maybe that's where the muddy footprints came from. This is like that old episode of The Twilight Zone. Do you remember? I think we talked about this, actually. The woman's in the mall at night and all the mannequins start coming to life.
Right.
That's Andy's Art Antiques and Oddities.
Maybe.
You know, one of my questions is, we talk a lot about in every industry about how all these businesses are changing and all these sectors are changing. And, you know, in a world increasingly dominated by mass produced goods, you know, what sets what you have apart, but also what sets antiques and art and oddities apart, you know? And do you think have you seen changes in trends? Is there a growing appreciation for these unique one of a kind pieces as opposed to the mass produced thing you get off Amazon?
Well, I'm currently by Loyola, and I do find that the students are into vintage stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's much, the things are well made compared to stuff you can buy at a big box store.
Yeah.
So I do see the appreciation returning. I also think that I see a lot of people becoming more concerned about the environment, and shopping vintage is a zero carbon footprint.
Mm-hmm.
So I think a lot of people are into that, finding something that's well made and they're not adding to pollution.
Well, and you mentioned to me you have sort of a dedication to, you know, repurposing, reducing, recycling. Buying vintage, as you said, a zero carbon footprint. You know, can you tell me a little bit more about your thoughts on running a business that has a focus on the repurpose, reduce, recycle, and maybe any of the pieces that stand out to you with that sort of mantra?
Like, my packing materials all come from another small business that gets a ton of bubble wrap and packing materials. So I try to use those up before I purchase my own, which usually is, I don't have to, because he keeps me pretty well supplied in my bubble wrap and paper and boxes if I need them. And then to the other end of the process, sometimes these old pieces served a purpose that people no longer seem to need. I had a secretary cabinet. A lot of people probably don't even know what that is, but once it's very small footprint, so it's perfect for Chicago condos and apartments.
Mm-hmm.
One side, probably about your height or so.
Mm-hmm.
And one side was a glass door and the other side was a desk that flips down with a shelf and a mirror. And it was not selling. It was sitting in my shop. And I just was like, that was probably one of the first where I was like, I need to think out of the box and do something unique. And there's been a huge influx of people that are doing home bars lately, I've noticed.
Yeah.
So people are buying coasters and cocktail.
Like drink carts and...
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I filled the entire glass side with cocktail glasses, stemware, that sort of thing. And then I opened up the desk and put a cocktail shaker, and I forget what, maybe an ashtray or something random. And then some empty booze bottles, some empty alcohol bottles on the shelf. And I had like 5 people on Instagram that wanted that cabinet.
Interesting.
I posted it like that.
So that's like a way of, you know, you hear reuse, reduce, recycle, but repurpose has this very different connotation to it. And that's the sort of thing I would never, I mean, not never, I'd hope not never, but I'm not going to look at that piece and think of, you know, if it has a desk or it has a cabinet like that, I think of, you know, the cabinets in my grandmother's house that just had china in them, or her collection of a Fabergé egg or elephants or whatnot. But you
Hummels.
Can... The what?
Hummels.
Hummels? Is that what they are?
No.
I don't know what a Hummel is.
Little tiny figurines that you will never find at my shop.
Well, then yes, Hummels. like cherubs,
They're all little kids.
Yeah.
And they were doing different things. And
creepy.
I don't get those in my shop. For sure, those must be haunted.
But that's the sort of thing you must have an eye for, is looking at something and figuring out how else you can use it.
Yeah. I try to bring in my artistic side, and how can I make this work so people want it and realize that there's more uses to these old pieces than what they were previously used for.
Yeah. And like you said, especially in Chicago, when people have smaller apartments and, you know, maybe like that's the sort of thing where if I could fold my cabinet up at the end of the day and then unfold it to have all the alcohol and the drinks out there. That's a fun little, I mean, I've always wanted to feel like that person in the nice, like 30s or 40s suit that, you know, you come over and party and I make your cocktail right at the drink cart for you.
Do you have a pocket square?
I don't. I would need to get a pocket square.
I have scarves. You can use one.
Okay, great. Scarves, ascots,
pocket squares. I have ascots.
There was the one very well-dressed mannequin when I was there last time. What was his name? He was wearing the sunglasses.
Vince?
Vince, yes.
Yeah, Vince had this. But he was like they were on his head.
Yeah, yeah.
On his forehead.
Vince,
he was being very chic.
Vince was very, very well-dressed.
Yeah.
Well, so is that something I assume you would do is if you're working with a client and they're thinking, I love this piece, but I don't know how I would use it. The idea of repurposing it is some, you know, as opposed to just, oh, it could go here in your house. It's no, why don't you try using it this way?
Yeah. There was an old ammunition crate and I had a client that we talked about it and they hung it above their toilet and it's where they open it up and they keep all of their, because it was a hinged crate and you can lock it and... they put shelves in it and it's above their toilet.
That's so awesome. Yeah. That's so fun.
I haven't seen it, but I'm sure it looks really cool.
Yeah. But I mean, it's the sort of things that I know I would never think of, you know, that's very cool. I mean, I bet, is it fun to have someone come in, find a piece and then sit down and talk and just get into a regular casual conversation about all the different things you could do with those pieces?
Yeah. Because sometimes just interacting with that person, I think of things that, or they think of things that I didn't think of.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, so even if they don't buy it, then I have like, that's one more thing I can tell someone else.
Well, I think that's one of the great things about your shop is that, you know, I talked about coming in and even just seeing I Love Lucy on the TV, the nostalgia factor is there, but everything in the store is a conversation piece. Everything, you know, has a different feeling, a different mood, a different effect, and can start a different conversation with someone.
Right.
So, you know, I feel like I could go in and ask you about any individual piece and we could go on a rant about, you know, how it connects to another piece in the store, how it could be utilized with, you know, my modern furniture that I might have. I don't have modern furniture. I have everything's being reused. Well, there you go. Reused.
There you go.
But, well, you know, I'm curious because we always like to talk about, you know, sort of where we always talk about like where things were, where things are now, but also where things are going in the future. Mm-hmm. And you've mentioned that you found that Loyola students who I believe would all be Gen Zers, maybe younger. I don't know. It confuses me after that.
I still.
Yeah. Ugh, I just.
Z is the last letter. So.
Well, no. And then I think it's like Alpha. I don't know. Someone comment and someone call in and tell us. We can't. You can't call in. I'm sorry. This is pre-recorded. But tell us what the next generation is.
Let's pretend. Yeah. The next caller.
The next caller will win. You get to name the next generation after Z. But looking to the future, you know, what are your aspirations for Andy's Art, Antiques, and Oddities? You know, what do you envision as, you know, the future of not just your business, but art? Vintage oddities, you know, where do you see it going?
Personally, I'm a one-person show, so I have to do everything, which is great, and I love it, but I also can't get out of the shop to do a bigger, like I'd love to go to another state and do some shopping that way for the store. So I think my goal is to get some employees in the shop for sure. I have a friend who helps me out, but she's not technically an employee. And she just does it because she loves my shop and she's my friend, which is great. But I would like to have employees and I would like to relocate. So,
yeah,
for sure.
Well, especially if you can travel around and find so many things from different, you know, you'll find, I'm sure, a number of different whole different types of items from, you know, one side of the country versus another. Or even if you're traveling to Europe or going somewhere.
Yeah, I think it's important for me to relocate because I'm still more of a novelty than a destination. So I think a lot of people are just coming in like, oh, look at this cute shop. You know, I even hear them saying that kind of thing versus I'm going there to buy a mirror or I'm going. That's mostly my regulars. Yeah. I have a handful of regulars and I think they come in with a purpose. But a lot of the times it's just people going to the coffee shop or the pet store or something else in the area. And they're like, oh, this is cute.
Well, can I ask you, this might be a large question. But, you know, what makes you a destination? Why, you know, what makes you more than a novelty shop? Part of it for me, just from my experience, is going in and talking to you and just having a conversation with you.
Yeah.
So I'd certainly say that always makes a destination place, but.
I appreciate that. Sophie?
Sophie. Yes, we do have our
Sophie makes it to destination.
As long as I keep petting her, she won't
I mean,
cry.
Everyone in the industry, what I love about it is that all these other businesses that I'm sure you've worked with, a lot of them are in your chamber area. They work together. They help each other out. Like if they don't have what someone's looking for, they're like, did you check out Andy's? It's up on Devon, you know? So there's a camaraderie there that I appreciate and I love about the industry. We're always getting something different. Like you just happen upon these things, you luck out, you're looking for something in particular, but it's nice that not everybody always carries the same thing.
Yeah.
In the industry.
I mean, so, with antiques, you vintage, can't antiques, carry the
art,
same thing.
And art, yeah.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. That's great. And I mean, obviously that's a big part of Andersonville too, is we love that our businesses, we find our businesses love working together and they love sending people to other places where they know they might have something else. Or if you go to an antique shop and they don't have the oddity you're looking for, well, hey, go to Andy's Arts, Antiques, and Oddities. They might have that oddity for you. Kind of commenting again on, you know, you said these Loyola students are interested in vintage. Do you think that, you know, I'm curious why you might think that is, or do you think that's a trend that's going to continue, that people are going to continue to be, is because everything's become so commercialized that the idea of antique and vintage is going to continue to grow?
I think it mostly stems from their concern about the environment. It's getting scary for them and other people have created this world for them. So buying vintage, buying antiques, it's just, it makes sense for them, I think.
Yeah.
I don't know how much of a choice it is rather than just the way it's got to be moving forward.
But you're also not going to argue with it.
I'm not going to complain about it. Argue with any of it.
Well, so finally, you know, I'm curious, do you have, from your experience, you know, opening during COVID, but also your experience of having this having been a passion for you? You know, a lot of people say they want to open a business, but they don't know what it is, you know, and if the question is you want to open this business, but why? Do you have advice for not just aspiring entrepreneurs looking to open a business, but people who have a passion and are trying to figure out how to do something with it, how to act on it? Because that seems like it was your experience.
It seems a little insurmountable to get into the process. There's a lot of barriers and a lot of permits and a lot of money that you're going through in the beginning. But I'm glad I did it. I'm glad I pushed through a global pandemic. I think my advice would be to not give up. And if you have something that you want to, don't wait until you're in your 50s. Like if you have this passion and you think you want to open this business, do it now. Mm. I mean, if you financially can or you're willing to go through that, I mean, it's a hardship, you know.
But it can be done.
I'm here.
Yeah.
Here I am.
You're here.
I'm here. Lots of loans and different things that have happened during, I mean, you had to during COVID. So just keep going. Fight. If you're passionate about it, it'll show.
Yeah. Well, Andy, before we go, where can people find you? Socials, and then actually the store, should have started on this in the top, but where the store is, because you're on Devon. You're a little
I'm
further
on
north.
Devon. Okay. I'm at 1253 West Devon Avenue. Mm-hmm. It's between Lakewood and Magnolia. I'm also on Instagram and Facebook. I don't know my Facebook handle.
I'm sure if you search Andy's Antique Arts,
it's nice having an A in the name of your shop.
Yeah.
But it's Andy's Antique Chicago on Instagram.
Great.
So,
and I actually just saw you had just posted because you just had your pride shirts printed up, right?
I do have pride shirts.
Yeah.
Yes.
You got, I saw those. You should check out. Andy's got some wonderful pride shirts.
And I'm having them done at Strange Cargo.
Well, there you go. Working together with local businesses.
Exactly.
Well, Andy, thank you very much for being here. It's been
thank
a pleasure
you for
talking
having me.
With you.